The Geek Cave, brought to you by Buzz Time. Great minds drink alike. Shirtosaurus, digging up clothing from your past so you can look rad today. And GameStop, power to the players. Hey, nerds. We understand you. Drop those controllers, lose the wizard hat, and ready your Cheetos. It's time for some hard-hitting talk about the movies, books, and games you love. So get ready, oh searcher of useless knowledge. It's time to step into the Geek Cave. Now, broadcasting from a top secret and totally awesome hidden base, I'm Kent Harris, and here's Darren Wright, Justin White, and Chad Savage.
And welcome to the Geek Cave Podcast movie segment. I'm Darren.
I'm Justin.
I'm Chad, and welcome as always. We are brought to you by Shirtosaurus, digging up clothing from your past so you can look rad today. Buzz Time, great minds drink alike, and GameStop, power to the players. So before we get into movies, and I realize movies are my thing, but everyone's a geek for something.
This is true.
So there's somebody out there who's just jonesing for Christmas music. New Christmas music, despite it not even being Halloween yet. Well, have I got some good news for you. William Shatner is releasing a Christmas album on October 26th.
Yes!
Via Cleopatra Records.
Woo!
Titled Shatner Claus, the Christmas album, it will feature such artists as Iggy Pop, Henry Rollins, Brad Paisley, ZZ Top's Billy Gibbons, Judy Collins, and former Yes keyboardist Rick Wakeman, among others. The song list right now has such things as Blue Christmas, Little Drummer Boy, Winter Wonderland, Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, and Silent Night.
So we got five songs on a six CD set.
Yeah. That we do. Where am I supposed to go from that? This is another fine mess you've gotten me into.
I'm sorry, Ollie.
Oh, speaking of Ollie.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a thing.
Yeah. So they are coming out with a Laurel and Hardy movie. Now, I don't mean a, like they did with the Three Stooges, where it's three new people pretending to be the Stooges. It's like a biopic of Laurel and Hardy. Mm-hmm. Laurel and Hardy, called Stan and Ollie.
Mm-hmm.
And the trailer is out. It stars
John C. Reilly
and
Stephen Coogan?
Yes, Stephen Coogan as Laurel and Hardy. And I got to tell you, they nail the look and they sound like Stan and Ollie. They really do.
And watching the trailer and seeing some of the bits, it looks like they put some time into making sure that...
Oh, yeah. What a hard life these guys have lived to sit down and watch old Laurel and Hardy bits to make, you know, just over and over again.
Yeah. Well, to be fair, you and I are not going to put the same time and effort into this an Abbott and Costello bit.
This is true, but I would love to try. The problem is...
We need somebody to pay us.
We need someone to pay us, and I don't think either of us could keep a straight face long enough.
I bet we could.
Abbott.
Well, yeah, but think about it. You know, hours of rehearsal.
That's true.
Eventually, you get tired of it.
Eventually.
Because both of us have to be straight-faced.
That's true.
It's just, you've got to be straight-faced while I'm yelling. Which is harder to do.
But the trailer is out. It's called Stan and Ollie. And from what we can tell, it takes place in the latter part of their career, like during their last big... Hurrah.
They didn't even know it was going to be their last tour.
Yeah.
But they were on their last tour in the UK.
Yeah. But there's also images of a younger Laurel and Hardy. So hopefully this will intermingle flashbacks of them in their heyday with the main storyline of their what would be their last tour.
Mm-hmm.
So they don't have a release date yet, as far as I know. The trailer just says coming soon. So just keep your eye out for that. But it looks really good. And if you even have a passing interest in Laurel and Hardy or those old semi-silent movie era, mm-hmm. moving into talkies, black and white comedies, you know, Buster Keaton, the Marx Brothers, Three Stooges, Laurel and Hardy, that vein of stuff. This is probably going to be a very interesting and fun ride.
We can certainly hope.
Yeah. I mean, it will more than assuredly tug at your heartstrings, but hopefully there will be more laughs than tears.
Well, and it was, you know, the end of Hardy's life. And from the time that when Hardy died, when Oliver Hardy died, that was basically the point that Stan Laurel stopped performing.
Yeah.
He was too sick to go to the funeral.
Yeah.
And so he stopped performing and said that he would never, you know, he didn't want to take the stage without his partner.
Mm-hmm.
But he kept his phone line public. And so Laurel would get phone calls from comedians and writers for the next like 20 years.
Yeah. Including Dick Van Dyke.
Yeah.
Who
did the eulogy for Laurel.
Yeah.
So, I mean, these are guys that today they would never make it because the type of comedy that they did just doesn't exist in the same way anymore.
Yeah.
But they were perfectly placed for their time to make what is a continuing impact today.
Exactly.
So, moving on from that, Bond 25 looks to finally have a director. Finally. After Danny Boyle dropped out over creative differences, the studio went hunting for a director and found Cary Fukunaga, the director of Beasts of No Nation. Now, hopefully he sticks it out and he goes in. That's fine. You know, he's a good director. He's able to wring a lot of emotional content out of some things. What marks this for me is that if he does it, he will be the first American-born director to take on the Bond franchise.
Hmm.
So, at 25. I figured they were just going to have Americans do the Kingsman stuff. Anyway. Disney has discovered that a Star Wars movie a year might be a bit much.
Yeah.
It turns out that
mon Dieu.
It turns out that there are limits, you know, to how much we're willing to put up with. In an interview with Hollywood Reporter, CEO of Disney, Bob Iger, basically admitted that they had moved too fast on Star Wars and we can expect some slowdown. There's more coming because they've got at least two different writers working on two different trilogies, but the pace will be more measured regarding both volume and timing.
Probably for the best.
Probably. So apparently there's this sport called basketball?
Basketball.
That was the movie.
But it's based on a true story.
Darren, can you help us out here? What are we...
You're talking about that game that Bugs Bunny plays?
Well, that's actually right up the alley. See, there's a movie coming in which a guy named LeBron James, who is apparently good at this sport.
Oh, LeBron, yeah.
Is going to play alongside Bugs Bunny.
Basketball.
Oh, is that what basketball? Basketball.
Ball
oh,
is,
that makes sense.
Is that where you make a basket?
No, I think you put the ball in the basket.
Okay.
Oh, and then you pick the basket up and run it down the field?
Sure, for a touchdown.
Huh. So, LeBron James and his production company, Spring Hill Entertainment.
No, because you can't use your hands.
Yeah.
Basketball.
Wait, that's soccer. It's football.
Well, wait, is it soccer or football? And
Depends on what
soccer? Does that involve socks?
No, what? I think that's the sport where you hit some guy in the head with gloves, you know, you sock him.
No, that would be sock in. This is soccer, so you're talking about beating up women.
So it's women. It's women's. It's a women's sport then.
So it's
soccer.
Oh, okay. Well, if it's
women's,
if it's
sport,
women's,
and sock
that's fine.
Is a men's
yeah.
Sport.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, well, that makes sense.
Anyway, the entertainment company announced a sequel, and then they unannounced a sequel, and LeBron James said it's a reboot, not a sequel. With Ryan Coogler, who's going to produce, and Terrence Nance to direct. They're also looking to get a guy named Michael Jordan. Without the B in the middle. So not Michael B. Jordan,
he's dropping his middle initial and he's just going by Michael Jordan.
I don't know, man. The pictures looked a lot older. Like, this is a different guy.
They can do a lot with makeup these days.
I suppose.
I mean, I loved him in Black Panther. I mean,
yeah. Oh, God. So, at any rate, it's been about 22 years since Bugs Bunny put on his cleats, helmet, shoulder, picked up his racket. What? Anyway, I'm so lost when it comes to sports ball at this point that I don't even know if I'm pronouncing Bugs Bunny right. But
go local sports team. Woo!
But Space Jam 2 question mark? Space Jam parentheses 2 and parentheses question mark is supposedly going to be a thing. The Space Jam.
Yes, but is it like Grape Space Jam, Blackberry Space Jam?
Raspberry,
yes. Very good.
Space Preserves.
It seems that Avatar The Last Airbender is going to get some new life in the form of a live-action series. The original creators, Michael...
Why are you groaning? This has never been done before, dude. They've never made a live-action adaptation of Avatar The Last Airbender.
You want to tell them or should I?
Let's just see what else I have to say.
Okay.
The original creators, Michael DiMartino and Brian Knitsko, are acting as showrunners and executive producers.
Oh, okay.
And it's good news.
Yeah.
Early on in the cartoon's life, there was a lot of excitement around having a live-action Aang and Company. And there was a movie, and that final product failed to live up to expectations. Now, primarily due to trying to fit an entire season into one movie, and eventually the whole thing was just forgotten. Hence, Justin's lack of memory.
I'm sorry. I saw something shiny and got distracted. I mean, all I heard was...
You're fine. You're pretty.
Thank you. I mean, the last thing I heard was there was excitement about a live-action adaptation. And so, yeah, I mean, like I said, it's never been done before. I think it's worth giving it a shot. It's going to be on Netflix, right?
Yep.
You know what? You're right. You're absolutely right. I retract my prior sigh.
Thank you. It's not often I'm right, but I do like to be noted when I am.
So, this has the opportunity to bypass mistakes that a movie might have made.
Understandable.
In that they're not going to have to try to fit an entire season of development into one episode. And the creators this time have specifically stated a commitment to a diverse cast.
Which makes sense.
Instead of a whitewashed cast.
Yeah.
When you're looking at an entire world's worth of peoples, it doesn't make sense that only your bad guys will look like a minority.
If anything, the bad guys should look like us.
Man, wouldn't that be transgressive? So, rumor has it that ABC's made a production commitment to a series that will feature female Marvel superheroes.
All right.
Okay.
There's nothing confirmed. There's nobody tied to it definitively. And all we've got is Variety is confirming through ABC that the project is hailing from Alan Heinberg, who wrote the screenplay for Wonder Woman. So, would it be nice to see more female-led shows out there? Absolutely, especially ones in our particular fandom. Will this see the light of day? It is entirely unclear at this point. We hope so.
Definitely.
Speaking of female heroes, Veronica Mars is coming to Hulu. Kristen Bell is going to wear herself a little bit thin being on, you know, The Good Place and Veronica Mars, but we reported the possibility last month during our Extra Life campaign. Still time to donate.
That's true.
And when, because of a tweet that she made, but now we have confirmation from Hulu and the production companies. The standalone Joker movie, also known as the worst idea since invading Russia in winter, has shared its first image of Joaquin Phoenix. Joaquin? Joaquin.
Joaquin.
Joaquin. Joaquin?
Joaquin.
Because there's no WH. Joachin?
Joaquin.
Anyway, Joaquin Phoenix as Arthur Fleck, and now the Joker in makeup. And the movie is set to be an origin for a character whose origin was always meant to be multiple choice, will now make concrete what should remain shrouded in mystery. Justin and I were discussing what they ought to do is make four versions of the movie and send them to the four different regions of the United States and the world and not tell anybody. So that when you try to look it up, you find out. And then when they release it on Blu-ray, there's a fifth one.
And it's just the 89 Batman film.
My man. So,
what did you think of the look of Phoenix? Because we see him in clown makeup. I'm not certain that's going to be the final look. But then again, everyone poo-pooed Heath Ledger's look in that first look, you know, reveal poster, and that turned out to be great.
I think we are seeing the Joker's makeup before he's the Joker.
That's where I am.
Like he's a party clown kind of thing. And the reason is that the smile was too genuine. When he smiles in that last frame of the thing, his eyes are crinkled up. I mean, he's actually smiling.
Right.
You know, it's not demented. It's not sadistic. It's not calculating. It's not sadistic. It's a genuine smile. Somebody told Joaquin Phoenix a joke and then took his picture.
Yeah.
You know, also it seems to be reminiscent of the masks from both the Dark Knight and the 66 Batman mask that the Joker and his, like the makeup has the same kind of triangles in the look there. So maybe if that's a kind of a flow through, it's kind of a neat Easter egg flow through, but you know, I don't know that I'm going to go see it. I'm probably going to Wikipedia it later.
I'm so
find out what it's about.
I'm so Batmaned out live action stuff, you know? And I know that Batman's not going to be in the film, but you know, it's DC has been having some struggles with the expanded universe. And so they're falling back on the one thing that they know they can do well, which is bat stuff. And I'm just tired.
They should do more Swamp Thing type stuff.
They really should.
Exactly.
There's other dark.
Well, they're doing a Swamp Thing series on DC Universe next year, I believe.
You know what? They should do a Booster Gold series or a Booster Gold movie.
I would watch that.
Opposed to the idea.
Or like a Blue Beetle. Give me a hero that most people know almost nothing about.
Well, there's Shazam.
Put them front and center. Shazam's been around a long time.
Right, but still, as far as like the general public knowing a lot about him, it's pretty small percentage.
Mm. Well, that's because they keep changing it up.
Fair.
Yeah. Shazam and Captain Marvel, no relation,
anymore.
Are really doing that in this next round of hero movies. Is they're taking characters that we don't know much about. They've not been mainstreamed.
Yeah.
For a while. So, speaking of heroes and things like that, Darren, you found some really contradictory kind of stories about one Mr. Henry Cavill.
Yeah, as it started out, there was word from the Hollywood Reporter that they had received confirmation that Henry Cavill had quit. He was done. He was no longer going to be Superman after putting in three films. Apparently, talks broke down about a cameo appearance in Shazam, and he decided, you know what? Life is too short. I don't want to deal with this. I'm going to be in the next Mission Impossible. Screw this.
If I can't have my mustache, then I'm not doing it.
No, if I can't have the Cavill stash, if you will. But and that spread like wildfire. And then we found out that he's taking the lead role in the Netflix series based on The Witcher. So that kind of lended credence to it. But now TMZ is reporting that it's possible that it's not real. Warner Brothers has been completely noncommittal on the thing. They did issue a statement after it went nuts online, and all they said was that, you know, we're appreciative of Henry's work, and we are looking forward to maybe one day working with him again. Which doesn't necessarily say, yeah, he quit, but it also does lend a little bit of weight to rumors that there are no plans whatsoever for another standalone Superman film, which angers me to some extent, because I thought Man of Steel was good. I know a lot of people also thought Man of Steel was good, but it wasn't Batman enough, I guess. That being said,
I liked the first half hour and the last half hour of Man of Steel the best.
Okay, that's fair.
Yeah, the stuff in the middle where he's trying to find himself, I didn't much care for.
That's understandable.
Fair enough.
That's understandable.
Honestly, I felt Man of Steel was too Batman.
There was a lot of Batman to that. Except for the part where he went to the church, that felt eerily, you know, Daredevil.
Yeah.
Fair. But Henry Cavill's not helping matters. He uploaded a video of himself to social media just with a blank expression on his face, no words spoken, slowly raises a Superman action figure into view, lowers it slowly out of view, and then that's where the video ends. So I don't know what the hell that's supposed to mean.
Man from Uncle sequel.
Yeah. So basically, right now, we're not sure. Already, people are fan casting for the next Superman. Michael B. Jordan's name has been thrown out. Guys, you do realize there are other people in Hollywood besides Michael B. Jordan.
There's Nicolas Cage.
But
well, I mean,
there's Ben Affleck.
Well, I just hope that this doesn't interfere with Jordan's role in Space Jam? Is that what we talked about earlier?
Space Jam 2.
Space Jam 2, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. We're not really sure. Now the latest discussion is that Henry Cavill might actually be the next James Bond.
Yeah, I saw that. I'm on board.
He is British, so...
After Man from U.N.C.L.E., which was a throwaway joke, but after watching Man from U.N.C.L.E., I think that he could nail a James Bond.
Were you reading his bio on IMDb this morning? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Look up Henry Cavill's bio on IMDb if you don't believe he's British. It is the most British thing I've ever heard in my life. I'm serious, folks. It is...
It's so British.
It is so British that you actually end up reading it in an accent.
Yeah. So... if I had to pick someone to replace him, I couldn't do
Matt
it
Damon.
Right now.
With Ben Affleck staying Batman. Directed by Kevin Smith.
Colton Haynes, he plays Roy Harper on Arrow. He's thrown out the name Matt Bomer. Not really familiar with him, but he does have the chin. It does look a little bit like Superman. He would be the first openly gay actor to play Superman. So I'm not really sure if Warner Brothers is going to take that step yet. But yeah, as it stands right now, we have no freaking clue if Henry Cavill is going to be Superman again. But it looks like probably not anytime in the next 5 or 6 years.
What's Brandon Routh doing lately? He'd make a good Superman.
He would make a decent Superman, yeah.
So out of the movies... And to the small screen, Daredevil season 3 is supposed to be coming up here in another couple months or so. And everything is pointing at, well, so the end of season 2 and then the end of the Defenders points to season 3 being following the Born Again storyline.
Yes.
Where effectively Matt Murdock has his identity is outed by Kingpin and everything just gets stripped away from him.
Yeah, and something really bad happens to Karen, which, Netflix, don't you do this.
Yeah. I'd like you to not make her a heroin addict.
Or kill her.
Or kill her. But,
it's a good story, though.
If it goes through, the problem with if it goes through is that the end of Born Again isn't really an upper. And I don't think that they would get a chance to make a season 4. Like, I don't think enough people would watch season 3 to the end to make a season 4. to see Matt Murdock basically return as Daredevil and the fall of Kingpin. I don't remember what the name of that storyline was. Because the only thing going through my mind is Kingdom Come, and I know that's
not
it.
No, that's not it, no.
So
I don't remember either. I was never a big Daredevil fan.
So if it's Born Again, you know, just settle yourself in, because as dark as, say, Punisher was, or season one of Jessica Jones, it would make those look like Chevy Chase National Lampoon movies by comparison.
Yeah.
The follow-up to Born Again was Last Rites.
Thank you. That's the one where Daredevil basically does exactly to the Kingpin what the Kingpin did to him. Takes away his money, his name, his reputation, his home, yada yada. So on to something a lot funnier. Over the course of 14 seasons and at least 3 hour-long specials, Alton Brown and the Good Eats crew merged Julia Child, Bill Nye, and Monty Python into one of the best cooking shows that's yet aired. Starting back in the day when there weren't 100 cooking shows.
Yeah.
Yeah. Some of those episodes are now getting a remake. You know, as Alton Brown launches Good Eats Reloaded to fix and, in some cases, just completely remake old episodes, some of which are nearly 20 years old at this point.
Hmm.
So, I mean, it makes sense that things would have changed, understandings of things would have changed.
Yeah.
But the first 13 episodes is going to air in the middle of October, October 15th, 9, 8 Central on the Cooking Channel. I'm looking forward to this. You know, Good Eats is a show that doesn't just teach you how to cook, but why certain things work the way they do.
Yeah.
Why does meat taste so much better when you sear it? Because of the Maillard reaction and because of these things. You know, why when you're making mayonnaise do you use an egg? Because of this. You know, it's just a really cool show.
It is. I mean, I don't consider myself to be much of a cook,
mm-hmm.
but I watch it because I like food and it was entertaining.
Yeah.
Alton Brown is just an entertaining person.
Agreed.
Who knows his way around the kitchen.
Mm-hmm. So, and I wonder if it's a jumping off point for, he had talked about doing an internet show, basically streaming directly in the internet to get away from some of the limitations of TV so that he could do ingredients that can't be shown on TV very well, like venison. You know, because there's no place that actually, you know, you can't go to your local grocery store and get venison generally.
True.
You know, you have to go to a specialty shop. It's not something that's, but also because of that, it makes it very expensive ingredient to get. So maybe it's leaning toward that. Maybe it's not, and it'll just be Good Eats Reloaded. And quite honestly, I'm okay if that's what it is.
Yeah, I'd be okay.
Jordan Peele is continuing to show that he's not afraid to take on projects that seem a bit far-fetched. This time, he's going to the Twilight Zone. Filling the shoes of Rod Serling as host and narrator for CBS All Access. It's coming in 2019. And he, on Twitter, released a video that starts with Serling's voice doing the opening narration and then transitioning to Peele's, and it's pretty good. My two hopes are, hope number one, that he's actually visible on the screen. It's not just a voiceover. The second hope is that it's better than the reboot from the 80s or the other reboot from the early 2000s.
Neither of which I remember.
Yeah. There was a movie in the 80s.
I remember the movie.
Yeah, and it was weird in a not necessarily good way.
Yeah.
Well, and the movie has some kind of controversy attached to it, too.
Yeah, because the John Landis bit, right? Yeah. Helicopter accident. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. No, I'm aware.
All right. Are there any other news and reviews before I get to this review, this recommendation, and this random movie review?
I don't have any.
Not to my knowledge.
All right. So after watching The Dragon Prince on Netflix, this is a... It's not a spiritual successor. It's a completely different thing, but highly reminiscent of Avatar: The Last Airbender, the cartoon. I've come to the conclusion that it's good.
Yeah.
The writing is smart. The animation is... You know what? We'll come back to that. The characters are compelling. The story world is believable. The premise... So the startup is there are six primal sources of magic. Sun, moon, stars, earth, ocean, sky. Then that unbelievable jerk species, human, discovers a seventh source called dark magic, which is parasitic. The source feeds off of magical creatures. Disgusted by this, the dragons and the elves push the humans to the western half of the world. Continent, nation, whatever. And the way is guarded by the Dragon King. 1,000 years later, the Dragon King is killed and the egg containing the heir is destroyed. And so as war between the groups is about to unleash, it's up to the unlikely team of a couple of human princes and a disgraced moon elf assassin to try and stop the war. Yeah. If you like the characterization and tone of Avatar: The Last Airbender, this is going to feel familiar. The show pretty deftly walks you through some pretty dark topics with humor and, honestly, quite a bit of grace. There are very few all-out bad guys in the thing. Most of them actually seem pretty complex. And the ones that don't seem complex don't seem all that bad. You know? The voice acting is fine, although one of the main characters is voiced by Jack DeSena, who voiced Sokka in Avatar, and it can be a bit distracting when he acts exactly like Sokka did. And I spent the first three episodes every once and again looking at my spouse and going, "Thanks for that, Sokka."
Well, I told my wife that if this were a D&D campaign, Sokka re-rolled and finally got to be a mage.
Yeah. Okay, so the animation is done on a computer. And then they cel shaded it. And then they reduced the frame rate to make it look more like traditional animation. And the problem is that it only mostly works.
Yeah.
So the show is beautiful. You know, when you're giving me a still shot, it is gorgeous. The greens, the details. When you've got high action sequences, everything looks fast and fine. It looks like old anime, you know, kind of thing, where instead of 24 frames, you get like 18, but it just makes the action that much faster. But in the slow scenes, when they're just floating down the river or they're talking around a campfire, the reduced frame rate gives this kind of jagged look to the motion, especially in the mouths. And you can't mess up mouths when you're looking at somebody talking.
Yeah. It did seem to get better toward the end of the season, though.
It did get better toward the end of the season. I think, though, because we stopped... There started being more talking during action. It wasn't... What I'm referring to is some of those earlier scenes where they're camping out.
Oh, I know. I know what you're talking about. Yeah, and it was very distracting.
Yeah. It was like trying to CGI out a mustache. As soon as it's pointed out, that's all you see.
Yeah. This sounds reminiscent of the Godzilla Earth movies that are on Netflix. That sounds like the same type of process they use. Mm-hmm. And the animation is very distracting. At times,
it absolutely is. Now, character development is great, and I'm still recommending the show. I enjoyed every episode, and I will probably watch the 9 episodes again just to see what I've missed and what other things I can pick up. By the by, General Amaya, I love her.
Yes.
General Amaya is a character that's in two episodes.
Two, yeah.
Yeah, maybe.
Maybe three.
I hope we see her a lot more for a couple reasons. One, she's badass. You know, two, it's one of the first times I can remember seeing a deaf character in a cartoon.
Well, I don't know if she's deaf. I think she's mute because she looks like she can hear people. She just can't speak.
I think she's reading lips. Mm. I mean, that's kind of the impression I get. But anyway, whether she's deaf or deaf mute or just mute, you know, it is a particular characteristic that isn't shown as a weakness. You know, she's not made worse because of that. In fact, it's made the rest of what she does that much better. Over and over again, we see the moon elf being able to do all kinds of things. And then there's General Amaya using just a shield.
Yeah.
For the most part, you know, taking care of business.
Almost decapitating folks, that kind of thing.
Yeah. So there is that. Do you have anything to add? That was pretty much...
No, I mean, you pretty much hit the nail on the head. When the animation works, it works great, but the choice for the sake of style, I would imagine, does tend to hinder it, especially in the slower parts. But like you said, it's still a great show, still worth seeing. It's just, it would have been flawless if they had picked a style and stuck with it, because the lower frame rate does definitely hurt it.
Mm-hmm. And the whole thing will take you like 4.5 hours to watch.
Yeah, only 9 episodes. So,
so if you've got just a long evening, go to town. Recommendations. If you like Monty Python, and if you're listening to us, you probably do, then look into Not the Messiah. He's a very naughty boy. It's an oratorio, which means it's a concert with a choir and soloists. It is not a movie in the traditional sense, but if you can handle
it, it's more of a concert film.
Yeah, if you can handle a comedic concert, give it a go. You know.
Yeah, it is basically Monty Python's Life of Brian in a twist, basically, yeah, in terms of how the story is told.
And just to throw this out there, if you are not a fan of concerts on television, then I'm going to recommend The Hitman's Bodyguard. And without saying too much, let me just say that I now consider it the prequel to the Marvel Cinematic Universe and Deadpool.
Hmm.
It's good.
So, do we have dice to roll? All right. Give it to it, Darren.
7.
7. Come on. Okay, we're at cult movies.
12.
12. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Okay, The Castle of Cagliostro.
Oh, okay.
Lupin the Third. Is this a movie, or is this...
I'm pretty sure it's a movie.
Because if it's not a movie, then the next one... close to it that is a movie is Battlefield Earth.
No, that is a movie, a Lupin the Third movie based off of a series. It's kind of a standalone movie, but it's not a series kind of thing, if I'm remembering correctly.
Yeah, it's a 1979 animated film.
1979?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, 1979 anime?
Yeah.
Yep.
Oh, no.
Chad?
This is pre-Akira.
Chad, I will watch this with you, okay?
Okay.
Well, hey.
All right.
If we're doing... this is for next month. I can watch it with you, too.
Ooh, that's right.
Well, both...
that's right.
Both of us will suffer with Chad.
All right. Cool. So then all I've got, if you guys have nothing else, is the random movie review.
I'm good.
Kent.
And now it's time for Chad Savage's random movie review.
So the review isn't funny. Turns out good
movies. All right, good night.
See turns out good movies don't get funny reviews. So it was The Money Pit was the movie we watched, and to put it this way, Walter Fielding and his girlfriend Anna, played by Tom Hanks and Shelley Long respectively, need to buy a house quick. So they find a $1 million house for the steal price of $200,000. And this is the point where Mike Holmes would say that they should have had a good home inspector go through the house before making the deal. But if they did that, then there'd be no movie. After buying the house, things begin to fall apart. Quite literally, the stairs fall down, the electrical starts fires, the floor gives way, the roof leaks. The house is in such condition that the only contractors willing to touch the place are the kind that take the money up front. Now, luckily, those people also seem to have a team that will show up and do the work, and 2 weeks is the promise. How long will all this take?
Two weeks.
After 4 months, the work is still ongoing and starting to wear on our heroes. So, Walter and Anna have been together for at least a year at this point. She is recently divorced from from her husband, who is the conductor for the orchestra that she plays in. Played by... I'll get to it. Anyway, when the divorce goes through, she's allowed to live in the apartment for a while, but she never does find a place to live. So when he comes back, she's got to leave. And there's stress about that, because the guy, it's Gudinov is his last name. I'm just Alexander Gudinov, who played the unkillable Carl in Die Hard. The guy's an Adonis, you know?
Yeah.
Put that guy next to Tom Hanks, you know, circa 1982, and it's like, huh. So Walter has to go away for an overnight meeting, and Anna, instead of staying at the house, the money pit, ends up staying the night with her ex-husband. And when she wakes up, she and we are led to believe that she cheated on Walter with her ex-husband. This leads to the climactic argument of the film, you know, because he knows that she didn't stay at the house because he called and no one answered. You know, she's lying. At least she thinks she's lying. And bolstered by Anna's guilt, by Walter's insecurities, and all this house stuff, it just comes crashing down in glorious fashion. You watch the movie not for the little jokes throughout. You don't watch it because they're getting their fresh water from the peeing fountain, you know, which is cute, but it's just kind of silly cute. You watch it to watch these people ultimately devolve in this stress over and over again until in a house full of construction workers, they are just shouting and screaming at each other about who's had it worse living and dealing with this house and with each other, until finally Walter just reached this point that says, because neither one of them really wants to, they both want to sell, but they don't want to sell because it's kind of admitting defeat,
yeah,
as it were. And so Walter says, we'll just live in separate sides, you on yours, me on mine. And Shelley Long opens the door, and after all this yelling that's just gotten louder and louder, we get this exchange. That idea is so dumb, I can't believe you passed the bar. That's hardly surprising since you've never passed a bar in your life, he says to her. She responds, you are so much less attractive when I'm sober. Well, thank goodness it doesn't happen all that often.
Oh.
Screaming at each other, yelling, and then those four lines said in the most beautiful conversational English that you can imagine an American giving. And it's just, everything's just, wow, that's amazing. Ultimately, they decide to stick it out till the house is done. When they'll sell the house, they'll split the proceeds. And shortly after, Surprise, surprise, it comes out that Anna did not, in fact, cheat on Walter. The ex-husband made it up to try to get her back. The movie, you know, he restores the relationship, you know, and it does so in a good way. The movie ends with a wedding, making it a comedy, even in the Shakespearean sense of the term. And so, is it good? Well, it's Tom Hanks and Shelley Long at a time when they're getting ready to really go up. It's classic 80s comedy. The yuppies are yuppier. The gender politics is troublesome. The plot is both predictable and it's simple, but it's good. You know, it's comfortable. This is Shelley Long in the middle of her Cheers popularity. You know, this is Tom Hanks just before he really takes off. Like, he's done The Man with One Red Shoe and Volunteers before this, mm-hmm. really. But the next 5 years, he'll do Dragnet, Big, The Burbs, Turner and Hooch, Joe versus the Volcano, Bonfire of the Vanities. I mean, this is right before he has just this boom.
This is before stuff. Tom Hanks.
So, as actors, these two nail the stress and the joy of the relationship, and it makes the movie all the better for it. And so, final is, watch the movie. Be like me. See the Money Pit. It's good. It's good enough. It's all right. It's not one that you're going to put on repeat. But you're looking for some kind of low-stress thing to watch on a Thursday night. Yeah, put in the Money Pit. And if there's nothing else... Nothing else?
Nope.
All right. So for Kent Harris, whose mustache once saved a busload of orphans, Darren Wright, whose enthusiasm is so catching that even the flu took notes, Justin White, whose wit is so quick that most people won't laugh till tomorrow, I'm Chad Savage, the guy who spends his showers thinking, that's what I should have said. Thanks for listening, and remember, everyone is a geek for something.